This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 79 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. Today we get down and dirty in the legal system with Lady Steele. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across the desk is the Beast. Welcome back. We've been on hiatus for a while.
We have been. We've been on extended summer vacation, traveling and so forth. I saw the lovely country of Jamaica.
Oh.
Won a move there.
Yeah.
Cayman Islands they can keep.
Yeah, you know, it's really tough. You left the country and I had to go to self with my crew. Oh, darn.
Yeah, we both had such tough lives. Well, at that particular moment.
Yeah, there it is. But it was wonderful, and that show's coming up here shortly. So,
yes, it is.
Or maybe that show's already aired, one way or another. It's already aired.
So, yeah.
Okay. So Beast, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, I have the most amazing woman that I met at Frolicon a few months back.
That's an interesting place to meet someone.
That is. She was perched on a table commanding the room. It was a full house, standing room only, I might add. And she was talking about how to avoid legal entanglements with what we do.
That's always an important subject in
always
this business.
Always an important subject. And I was just blown away, and we made some connections, a few false starts back and forth. And today, we have our own Skype with us. Lady Steele.
Well, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Such a grand and glorious introduction. I don't even know what to say. Thank you so much for that, Beast.
Well, welcome to the show is what we have to say.
That's right. You're such a beast.
Oh, you haven't got within 3 foot of me lately, though. I'm quite hungry. Anyway, I was just blown away by the candor and depth of knowledge you had at Frolicon for your discussion. And I would like to bring that to your listeners today.
Well, I would be more than glad to do that. If you don't mind, I have a little bit of homework that I like to do at the beginning of all such podcasts and radio shows that I do. And it's the disclaimer that as an attorney that I have to kind of throw out there to the rest of the world. And this is just a little bit of a blurb, not much. And I just say good evening, ladies and gentlemen, everyone who's listening. My FetLife handle is Attorney Lady Steele. I am known as Lady Steele in the community. And my real and genuine name is Sarah Avraham. And I do I am licensed to practice law in the state of Georgia and nowhere else. And if you listen to this podcast and you have a specific case that you need help on, please do not rely on anything that I say here as legal advice, because it's not. I'm not here to give legal opinions. I'm just here to talk about the law. And if you do have a case that you need help on, I suggest that you consult an attorney, hopefully a competent one, in your own jurisdiction in regards to the specific facts and issues in your case. I would very much appreciate that. So none of us here are attorneys or acting in the capacity of an attorney. And so that's what I have to say about that. So let's get to the fun stuff.
Let's get to the fun stuff, indeed.
Yeah.
When I was there, your presentation was BDSM and the law.
That is correct. That's the general name that it goes under a couple of different names, but that's the most popular one, yes.
And I'll just give you the floor here because you have done this several times. And
I've done it a time or two, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll let you go for it.
All right. Well, what I like to talk about whenever it comes to BDSM and the law is a couple of different areas. Because the most frequent questions that I get are about what happens if I am stopped on a traffic stop and I have my toy bag with me. The second one is what happens whenever I am at my home and I'm either participating in BDSM type activities or I'm at a private play party, and what happens then? And then another one that I get a lot is what happens if I'm in a public dungeon and the police come to the door. And then the other one, which is sort of a cultural thing, it just depends on what part of the United States you're in. But what happens if I'm at a hotel at a Frolicon type convention or something to that effect, and the police come and kind of bust the door down? Or what if I'm in my hotel room and they come to my door? Now, that's a lot to cover in an hour's period of time or so. So if you'd like to narrow those down for me, you can, or I can just dive in and keep talking until I bore the literal pants off of you. So that's your choice.
Sarah, we have plenty of audio tape here, so we can go for it. And if this runs long, we'll divide this up into two episodes.
Well, right on. That sounds fabulous. So traffic stops, dungeons, hotels, and homes. So I will cover all the above. So we'll start with the traffic stop. So, you know, you get all dressed up and you're all pretty and you're going to the club and you're ready, or you're going to a play date or something like that, and you get your toy bag and you throw it in the back of your car and you're on your way. Great. Sounds lovely. And then you get stopped by the police because you roll through a stop sign, because you have a tail light out, for any other multivarious reasons, that they think they have probable cause, or maybe they do, you know, for a valid traffic stop. Not all police officers are bad. I do like to, you know, put that out there to the world. We've had a lot of really bad examples of police between St. Louis and, Baltimore, but you know, that's not always the case. So let's say you're nervous and you totally blow through a stop sign because, you know, you're going to a play date and it sounds really cool and awesome. So the police officer pulls you over. What do you do? Now, I'm going to stop the story right there because we need to back up before you even leave your house. I say this to a lot of people, and sometimes it is a popular, it's popular in the statement and it's received well, and sometimes it's not. I tell people, I know you want to be all sexified whenever you get to where you're going, but whenever you're out in public and your car is considered public, especially if a police officer pulls you over, wear a coat, wear a jacket, wear appropriate clothing. And by appropriate, I mean street legal clothing. While you're in your car, if you want to have all your sexy gear underneath, that's fine, but have jeans and a t-shirt over it.
So if your submissive is sitting on the other side, mm-hmm. there, you, them being half naked and in bondage is probably not the best image to present to the police officer walking up to your car.
Yeah, no, not so much, especially the bondage part, because and this is going to be an overarching theme in everything that I talk about. As of right now, as most of the United States laws stand, and matter of fact, in all 50 states, what we do is not legal. Consent is not a valid defense in the criminal courts. As a matter of fact, the NCSF this week actually put out notice, and I saw it plastered all over FetLife. There's a survey and a petition that you can go and sign that says, actually, they've already done the survey, but I think it's still open, but a petition that you can go and sign that says consent should count. It's absolutely key, and it should be able, you know, it should be available as a criminal charge, a defense to a criminal charge. So if you would like that information, towards the end of the podcast, I can dip into my email and see if I can't find that. But if all else fails, just go to the NCSF's website, National Coalition of Sexual Freedom. I work with them closely, and they would be, you know, grateful to have as many signatures as possible. Hopefully by the time this podcast is produced, then that'll still be up there and available.
And hopefully we still have a climate in the United States where we can push that through at least one or two liberal states.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it happened for marriage equality, so let's get equality for us now. So, no, if your slave is in bondage next to you, that's kidnapping. So, or it at least can be construed as kidnapping. And so you kind of want to save that until you get to your destination, wherever it is that may be. You know, whenever I teach 201 and 301 level classes, like kidnapping and, different sorts of edgier scenes, you know, a lot of people, especially whenever it comes to kidnapping, they really want to, you know, accost somebody and tie them up and put them in the trunk of their car and drive off with them and all of this neat stuff. And I, on a personal level, can absolutely get down with that. I, on a professional level, cannot absolutely get down with that. I kind of can't. I mean, I kind of can. And if you want to pay my student loan payments, then please do. And then give me a call and I'll be glad to be your attorney, provided that you're either in Georgia or I can get waived in on a one-time basis, which I can, by the way. I'm not just restricted to practicing just in Georgia. But anyway.
So in that case, if you're submissive in bondage, you're going to end up kissing the pavement while all that gets sorted out.
That's a real possibility. So keep it as vanilla as possible while you're in your car, dress-wise. Now, let's get to the toy bag, shall we?
Shall we?
We have, you know, Master and I, we have a simple duffel bag. You know, we don't have canes or any sort of long implements or anything like that that can't be folded up or whatever into something shorter. But I tell people all the time, you know, you really seriously need to invest in something, some sort of toy container that looks as innocuous and as innocent as possible. You know, I've heard of people that have gun cases because, you know, that extra scare factor and woo. Yeah, you know, sounds great in theory. But again, practical application, not so much. Not so much, no. So you really should get something like a toy bag, or I'm sorry, a duffel bag or something like that for your toy bag. Now, the most important part of any container that you can have is the lock. And it doesn't matter if it's a lock. It doesn't matter if you have like a little bitty diary lock or if it's a great big combination master lock, you know, big daddy sort of lock. You need a lock because if the police find your bag, they require a certain amount of legal documents like warrants in order to break that lock to get into your bag. They can't just willy-nilly see a bag and say, oh, jeepers, that has a lock on it. I'm going to break that and go in and see what's in there.
That's really good advice.
That's new information for me.
You're absolutely, you know, not allowed to go in where that lock is until you have certain papers. Now, another additional layer of protection. Oh, first of all, the bag should not be see-through. I don't really know why you'd have a see-through toy bag. That'd be kind of weird. But, you know, hey, to each their own. Make sure the bag is completely opaque. And it can, and it looks like, you know, a regular innocuous duffel bag or, you know, golf bag, you know, if you've got really long canes or something to that effect. And then you also should have the lock on it. And then the third level of protection is put it in something that requires a key to open, or at least some sort of extra action other than just looking around to open. For example, if you have a, you know, regular everyday car, then you would put it in the trunk. Trunk has a lock. It requires your permission to go into that trunk. If you have a pickup truck, then put it in a locking toolbox on the back of the pickup truck or a locking bed cover. If you have an SUV, it doesn't necessarily have a trunk, but it does have a cargo cover in the back. Now, that may not necessarily lock, but it still has the implication that whatever it is that's under there, you don't want anyone to see. So the highest level of protection you can give yourself is putting it in some sort of locking mechanism, such as a trunk, such as a locking toolbox, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got three levels of protection. You've got the lock on the trunk. We're just going to use trunk for an example. The lock on the trunk, and then the opaque toy bag where, you know, they can't just look at it and say, oh, there's stuff in there that could be all weapony. And then you've got the lock. So they have to go through three different levels of legal protection that we all have as United States citizens in order to get to what is inside that bag.
And I am reminded here of the protocols whenever you travel with a weapon. You want to keep it away from yourself and out of sight.
That is correct. Because you do not want to make the police think that it is within your arm's length or the wingspan range, which is why I say do not put it in your back seat. Please put it in your trunk.
And what about handcuffs?
All the same. You know what? You don't really want to give the police any sort of implication that you're going to use something against them. You know, a bamboo cane may be a cane to us, but it may just be a bamboo stick to them. But still, it can be used as a weapon. Same thing with the handcuffs. You know, they might see that as a credible threat in regards to somebody could whip those out, you know, somehow fasten them onto the police officer and then put them in a compromising position. Just pretty much anything that's in your toy bag. Just keep it away if you absolutely possibly can.
Okay.
Once you have left your house, and you're all excited and you roll through the stop sign, then you have the issue of actually being stopped. Now, what do you do whenever you are stopped? The first thing that you do is don't panic and realize something. Not everybody on the police force is, Baltimore, pretty much. You don't have to worry about that. And be as calm as possible and be as polite as possible. And so whenever they pull you over, be calm, know your rights, be very polite, keep your hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel, and whenever the police officer comes up to your door, you crack the window. You are by no means required to open the window all the way, open your door, or anything else. Crack the window enough where you can speak, say, "Good evening, officer, how may I help you?" and let it go from there. Then, of course, they're going to ask you the question, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" Why are they asking you that? They're asking you that because they want you to admit guilt, because it makes their job easier, especially considering they have a microphone on them and possibly an audio camera on them, depending on what jurisdiction you're in now. They definitely have a camera in their car, more than likely, and they want you to admit guilt so whenever you try to fight that ticket, they can produce the video that says, hey, they confessed to the crime. Now, have you been Mirandized? Of course not. However, that doesn't mean that they won't try to use it against you nonetheless, especially in court. So, "No, officer, I'm sorry, I don't know why you pulled me over." Or just say, "No, officer," you don't even have to be that verbose. I'm a lawyer, I'm a very verbose person. But you know what? The best thing that you can do whenever you're stopped by the police, and by the way, this applies in any of the situations, any of the scenarios that we're going to be talking about tonight. Be polite, be calm. You don't want to look squirrely in the presence of the police. Know your rights. And short, concise, truthful answers. Truthful is always the biggie.
But there's a reason that they put in there, you have the right to remain silent. It's best to remain silent as possible.
That's correct. Remaining as silent as possible. Now, you don't want to automatically just say, "Well, I'm going to, exercise my constitutional right to remain silent according to Miranda versus Arizona." you really don't want to do that. Because first of all, they're going to wonder why you want to be so silent when all you did was roll through a stop sign. So don't be that guy either, be cooperative and be truthful, but you do not have to tell them your life story or anything else other than the truth. "Do you know why I pulled you over this evening?" "No, officer." And always use officer. "Sir, ma'am," that's fine. Officer's always good. It gives them the respect that they're due. And then they'll start asking all sorts of different other questions. Say, for instance, they think that, you're suspicious for whatever reason. They'll say, "Ma'am, sir, I need for you to step out of the car." That's whenever you say, and we're all going to repeat this together, "I do not consent to any searches, officer." Let's say it together.
I do not want to search any searches, officer.
Officer. Yeah, we'll get better. It's funny. As B said, I've given this presentation many, many times, and I actually had someone come up to me at the local dungeon not too long ago that said, "I want you to know I didn't get a ticket whenever I got pulled over the other day." So why is that? I remembered what you said. "I don't consent to any searches, officer." And whenever a certain ilk of police officer hears someone say that, then they know that they're dealing with somebody who's not BSing around, and they know they can't pull any kind of shenanigans. And so they ended up having a very positive experience with law enforcement, but they stood up for their rights. And, well, that's kind of why I'm doing what it is that I'm doing. So, "I do not consent to any searches, officer." "Well, I need for you to step out of the car." "I do not consent to any searches, officer." Unless they get irritated, agitated, or otherwise unruly, try to say it three times, just to make sure. And why? There's no magic, law that says, you have to say it three times. No, what the magic is that ensures that you're heard by the officer, because, they have adrenaline pumping and everything else, because every time they pull somebody over, it could cost them their life. So, you kind of have to make allowances for that. They may not hear you, but you want to make sure that they hear you. You also want to make sure that the microphone and or video hears you, because that preserves your rights under the Fourth Amendment. search and seizure. So after you've said that, don't be a hero. Don't be a vigilante. Get out of the freaking car. You're absolutely not required to sit there and be a douche. You know, as I say in my protocols and etiquette class, the number one rule is don't be a dick. Don't be that guy. Nobody likes that guy. The police officer doesn't want to have to deal with that guy. The only person that's going to like you being that guy is your lawyer when you call them, because again, you're going to make their next couple of student loan payments. So get out of the car.
Okay.
Do exactly what they say. Now, on your way out, roll your window up, because you can certainly roll your window up, turn your car off, take your keys out of the ignition, get out of your car, and if you've got a keypad when you shut the door, lock it. Or you can lock it as you're getting out of your car, just whatever it takes to get your door locked whenever you shut it.
Okay.
Have a manual door locking mechanism, and God bless you, you know, you still have an antique car, then lock it on the way out, but don't lock yourself out. Always remember to take your keys.
That's a bit embarrassing.
Don't that guy, because then you'll be stranded, and well, yeah. Then asking the police officer, yeah, can you kind of help me break into my car? Yeah, no, that's not very handy.
No.
So you take your keys, you get out of the car, and you lock the car behind you. Why? Because what did I say before about the trunk? They have to have a certain level of legal documents, warrants and other such things, in order to break that seal. Your windows are sealed, your door is shut, and it is locked. That is still your piece of property even whenever you exit it. So they, in order to search the car, they're going, again, to have certain amount of probable cause and eventually some sort of legal documents that said that it was perfectly acceptable to do that.
Now, what if you have a passenger in your car with you?
Well, he only told you to get out, didn't he?
Yes.
Right. Pay close attention to what he says, and I'm assuming he, that's very sexist of me. Pay attention to what the officer says, and if they say, I need for you both to get out of the car, then both people or five people or 20 people or whatever needs to get out of the car, but the very last act needs to be you locking the door before the final door is shut, or for whenever the final door is shut, because that seals your car, and again, they're going to have a certain amount of probable cause and or a warrant in order to search that car.
And most of the time, they're not going to take that on a traffic stop and take that time and energy to get all that for a traffic stop.
Of course not. They can say, I'm going to have the dog sniff your car. I don't consent to any searches, officer, but go ahead and let them sniff your car. They want to pat you down. I don't consent to any searches, officer. Let them pat you down. You know, I knew somebody a long time ago, and he said that he had seen someone pulled on this off on the side of the road, and this was in Florida, and the person's car had been torn apart and, you know, blah, blah, and all this. No, that's just so unjust, and you should sue the police officer for the cost that it took in order to get, you know, everything back together. Well, it's a lovely thought, but it doesn't work like that, because there's a certain amount of immunity that law enforcement enjoys. As a result, you can't sue them for doing their job, just like I can't be sued for doing my job whenever I stand up in court and call somebody, you know, a cheating, lying, rat bastard or whatever the case may be, because I have to be able to, I mean, even if I don't even use that language, even for me to be able to accuse someone else of adultery in court if I'm doing a family law case, you know, that's slander. And if it's written on the court reporter's case, that's libel. And so you do not want to end up being liable. For libel, isn't that fun, if you're doing your job. And so law enforcement also enjoys a certain amount of protection as well. And so you cannot sue them for them doing their job. It just doesn't work like that. So let them do their searches. At every step, you know, I want you to open your trunk. I do not consent to any searches. Don't say, why do you want to look in the trunk? It's not their job to answer your questions. It is your job to protect your rights by repeating the same thing over and over and over again. I do not consent to any searches because, you know, and I describe this in the discussions that I do, you know, out there on the street, that's the Wild West. The police officers are going to do whatever they want to, however they want to whomever they want to. And it's up to me, the attorney, whenever it gets to court to sort out what happened out there in the Wild West, which is why you don't have to conform to the police officer's wishes, but you do have to comply. In other words, you don't have to conform to his way of thinking as far as why it is that they pulled you over, but you do have to comply. Lest you end up, you know, resisting arrest, you get everything torn apart and, you know, et cetera, ad nauseum. You don't want that.
No, you don't want that.
So once everything is over and done with, if you think that your rights have been violated, or, you know, you never know. Maybe he just wanted you to get out of the car to see if you would be cooperative, and you're cooperative and you're polite. You get the ticket written. Boom, done. Or maybe not. Maybe it's worst case scenario. You know, I tell people all the time, I can think of the best case scenario all I want to. It's planning for the worst case scenario is what I have to do. And so worst case scenario is that you call me or someone like me, and then we investigate all of the issues, you know, Fourth Amendment and otherwise, in regards to what rights you may have been violated. But be as nice and as polite as possible. And don't be that guy. Don't ever be that guy. Nobody likes that guy. Protect your rights, and you'll be good.
And you'll go on your own. On your way with a ticket, or maybe nothing.
Or maybe nothing. It's entirely possible. You never know. Sometimes police officers really do stop you because you have a headlight out. Maybe you don't know. I mean, yeah, is that probable cause for more? Of course it is. But if you don't give them any reason to further search, chances are they're not going to.
Now, I know in our community, things get a little strange, and we may not know the real names of everybody that we're playing with.
Yes, that is correct.
And you have a passenger. Are you required to discuss the passenger with the officer?
No, you're never required to discuss the passenger with the officer, no matter if you know them or not.
Okay, so the fact you may not be able to verify that person by their real name is not an issue.
No, not at all. Because what I would say is, officer, I don't have that knowledge. I don't have that knowledge. Period. End it there. I mean, of course, you want to be nice. You say, I think you should ask them. Yeah, don't be that guy. Don't rat out your friend or your potential play partner. That might not get you any nookie. I'm just saying. But what you can do is say, officer, you know, again, be truthful. Be concise. Officer, I don't know. You don't even have to say, I don't have any knowledge about, you know, that's the lawyer in me talking. No, I don't know. And don't say it like a smartass. Just say, you know, officer, I really don't know. And leave it at that.
And when they continue to press you?
Officer, I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you've seen some of the videos that are out there now with people starting to stand up for their rights, and, you know, they can have the camera phones, especially at some of the border stops or the, what is it, paper stops that they had out in Arizona. The officers sometimes get very frustrated when you give the exact same answer in the exact same monotone way over and over again. Well, they can get agitated all they want to. That doesn't necessarily mean you're doing anything wrong. And in some worst case scenarios, that might actually mean you're doing something right. So keep on. Officer, I don't know. And, you know, don't be confrontational. Again, don't be a dick about it. Just monotone, answer the question, and that's that.
Now, you mentioned the cell phones with recording capabilities. Do you recommend that those be used or not used?
Well, depending on what state you're in, you may not have the right to use them. You may not have, you know, and at that point, the officer may ask to confiscate your phone. It can get into other constitutional issues, et cetera, et cetera. You know, here's the thing. If you want a recording of what's going on, you can absolutely start the recording, flip your phone around, leave it in the console or in the dash or something, somewhere where they can't see it, you know? If you absolutely are, you know, or where the speedometer is, you know, leave it there where it's not obvious. You don't even need a recording, actually. You can actually, you know, and I actually suggest this to people who don't feel safe, you know, typically women, although it doesn't have to be, who are stopped in a traffic stop and they're not sure they have been stopped by a valid police officer, then what you do, well, first of all, and actually, if you don't mind me interjecting this, if you do not feel like you're being followed by a valid police officer, excuse me, what you can do is call 911. The officer, when the operator comes on, you say, I'm being followed by a police car. My license plate number is, you know, blah, blah. This is the year, make, model, and color of my car. I want you to let the police officer behind me know that I'm not trying to evade. I am actually wanting to go to a place of safety. And they are supposed to call them, radio them, and let them know what's going on so they don't escalate the situation. Now, if you get pulled over and you want a recording of everything, call somebody. You know, I would call my husband, my master, and I would, you know, say, hey, this is what's going on. I want you to listen in on the conversation. Now, granted, then you're, you know, relying on eyewitness or ear witness, I guess, testimony. So it might be best if you, you know, have a readily accessible recording app on your phone to just start recording it. But if you do that, understand if they find it, they're going to want to know why. They're automatically going to be put on the defense. And depending on who they are, it might end up making things harder on you. Some really super honest police officers may not have an issue with it. You know, it's one of those kind of things. You don't mind being recorded if you're not doing anything wrong. Well, not saying that the police may be out there doing something wrong, but they may not want the hassle.
They may not be wanting to be documented on following perfect protocol every time.
Correct. So, you know, that's really up to you. I've met every range and color of the rainbow of people doing this. And what I have seen is that, you know, most people aren't super paranoid, but for those that are, I tell them, go ahead. And if you end up getting yourself in extra trouble because of it, call me. Because I will, you know, be glad to research the law in whatever jurisdiction that you're in and defend you as best as I possibly can.
Now, in your state, do you need the consent of all parties to make a recording?
Consent of all parties to make a recording. The last I read of the law, this has been a couple of years ago where it applied to me, yes. But I would have to do a super Google search of that really quick in order to answer you truthfully. I don't know.
But in most jurisdictions, historically, you've needed the consent of all parties involved.
That's correct.
To make a recording.
That's correct. And you know what? That's the safest way to do it. But always remember something else, too. In order to, you know, for a person to consent to the recording, you know, and all parties have to consent. Well, that's only if you're going to use it as a record or as potential evidence in certain cases. It's perfectly okay to record and the other person not know if you're trying to catch them doing something illegal. In some jurisdictions, I'm not going to say all, because especially since I'm unfamiliar with the law in my particular jurisdiction. But yeah, I would, you know what? It's better to have it than to need it. I wouldn't care if I got consent of the officer or not. I would go ahead and record it and present it to my lawyer and let them sort it out. Because, you know, it's one of those situations where if you don't do it, your lawyer might end up looking at you going, my God, why didn't you record this? You know, and then you're like, oh, well, crap, I didn't know I could, or I had to have the consent of all parties. Well, you know what? It's better to have too much information than not enough. Give it to them, let them sort it out.
Now, you have got that little ticket or big ticket, and you're on your way down the road to your next stop. Well, what are you looking out for legally to protect yourself at, say, a play party?
So say we're going to someone's private home. We're going to go private home first, and we're going to a play party. Now, the rules, if you are having private activity in your home or group activity in your home, pretty much apply the same. Now, of course, as I'm sure you've heard, while marriage equality was actually being acquired, what was being eroded away is our Fourth Amendment right to, because traditionally our home is absolutely sacrosanct in regards to being able to be searched. What that means is your house is your castle, and unless they have a damn good reason, they couldn't go, you know, busting up in there and searching because you had Fourth Amendment rights. Those have since been eroded by the most recent laws that have been put out. And I honestly, I don't even want to speak about that too much right now, because I have a feeling that's going to be challenged very quickly, very, very quickly. And to be honest, I have not read up on them completely to know exactly everything. Because, you know, you can see the clickbait on the internet and say, oh, we don't have any Fourth Amendment rights anymore. Well, that's not necessarily the case. It does take a legal mind to sit here and look and analyze all of this. So what I'm going to do is enumerate what your rights are according to the United States Constitution, not necessarily other laws that have been changed since. Go to a play party. And if you host a play party, you have two different sets of responsibilities. If you go to a play party privately at someone's home, always be diligent in regards to what it is you're doing and where it is you are doing it. You know, if they tell you no nudity out on the back deck because the neighbors can see, well, you know, do that. This goes back under the whole etiquette and protocol thing of don't be a dick. You know, obey the house rules, because they're probably there for a good reason. Always have something available where you can cover illegal bits in the event of a police raid. And what that means is robes, preferably, that cover you from the top of your neck to the top of your feet and go all the way down to the wrist. Because if they can't see anything, they do not have probable cause to speak to you further. And then they go into, you know, searching your person. And then you say, I do not consent to any searches, which you do anyway. And so those are your rights and responsibilities. Obey the house laws. Use common sense. For goodness sakes, I know Steve Harvey is right and that common sense isn't so common, but it really should be. So please, please do use common sense. Don't go running around butt naked, as we say in the South, you know, out throughout the backyard, unless you know that there's nobody around who gives a happy legal crap as far as what's going on. So that as far as being a party goer, those are your main responsibilities. As far as being the party thrower, a couple of different things you can do to help make your life a lot easier. You know, I live in a subdivision. A lot of people do. What I would do if I was having a party such as that is that I would go to each of my neighbors, because we actually have a very good neighborhood watch here, and I would just actually send an email out to them or give them some sort of notice that, you know, in a couple of weeks I'm going to be having a party. There may be some loud music. There may be some loud noise. There may be a lot of parking. If any of this annoys you, please come find me. And I will be more than glad to help out the situation, or even better, so you don't have to leave the comfort of your own home. Here's my cell phone number. Call me anytime it bothers you, and I'll be more than glad to help you out.
And this keeps them out of your living room at the most inopportune moments.
Correct. It also gives them the opportunity to have a little bit of power, because, you know, everybody wants to feel important somewhere, sometime. It gives them a little bit of power, and it gives them the remedy that they need in the event that anything that's going on at the house is bothering them. So now, will they actually use that phone number? Well, let's hope. But if they don't, then, you know, that's something that you will have to deal with here later on with what I'm talking about. You know, a week before the party, a couple of days for the party, you know, do a little bit of a reminder and let them know. Something else you should do. You should walk around your house and check for any available places where anyone from the outside can see or hear easily on the inside. I have a modern built cedar home. I'm sitting in my office, which is at the top of a couple of flights of stairs, and I am looking out this giant picture window into the giant trees in my front yard. Seems fabulous, but somebody from the street, if I was doing a scene up here in my office, could absolutely see what's going on. So if I were to throw a party like that and my office area would be a play area, I would, you know, put sheets up or aluminum foil or whatever the case may be to where only the birds could see what's going on, because, well, the birds don't care. So once you have soundproofed and vision-proof as best as you can your home, then look at how many entrances and exits you have. My house has two garage doors, one back door, one sliding glass door in the kitchen, and one front door. The police can come in any one of these doors. Ideally, you have people only coming in and going out one, maybe two sets. Because for every door that is being used, you need to have somebody stationed on the outside of the door. And these people do not need to be owners, leaseholders, roommates, lovers, or anything else of the people that own or lease the house.
Because so they can't in any way say give consent to anything, because it's not theirs to give.
That is correct. And if they do accidentally give consent and the police believe them, then a lawyer can fight that in court. So if the police come knock, knock, knocking on your chamber door, then what happens is that the person who is on the outside calls the person that is on the inside. And they say, the police are here. Would you please get the owners of the house? Don't ever name names. Please get the owners of the house, or the leaseholders of the house, whatever the case may be. And then the leaseholder of the house or owner of the house is out giving signals to other people as well as giving signals themselves. And these people disperse and tell everybody that's at the party, if you are in an otherwise compromising position, get right. Because right now we may have a situation. Now, that does not mean anyone should scream, holler, act stupid, or do anything else except, what did I say a while ago?
Cover up.
That's it. Cover up. That's it. Preferably you throw your toys in a bag, shove them under a bed, you know, whatever the case may be, because if the police just happen to catch a glimpse inside the crack of the door and they see, you know, somebody up on the St. Andrew's cross and somebody with a bullwhip, yeah, that might be a little bit of probable cause to let them in the house. That's another thing. If you're the house owner, no matter where these doors are, hang a sheet on the other side of the door. So even if the door is standing wide open, that sheet is covering where they cannot see to the inside of the house. Because if front door watchman calls to the owner of the house and Bob, the owner of the house, has to come up to the front door to come out, you don't want them to see anything that may be going on in there. So what you do is that you hang that sheet. They come through the sheet in the most discreet way possible, and you shut the door behind you. Again, shutting the door behind you makes the police know that you do not consent to any searches, much like what? Whenever we were...
It's a traffic stop, yes.
That is correct. So, once you shut the door behind you, you know, you use some of the same methods. Good evening, officer. How may I help you? You shut the door behind you, and you say, again, a lot of the same methods as whenever you were in a traffic stop. Good evening, officer. How may I help you? You know, listen to, oh, well, you know, we've gotten a noise disturbance here. We're kind of wondering what's going on. Oh, I'm so sorry, officer. As I've told my neighbors, I was having a party tonight, and apparently some of my partygoers got a little bit out of hand. And, you know, I'll be sure to let them know that they need to keep it down, officer. And you know what? 9 times out of 10, they're done. If they don't see anything, they don't hear anything like, whoosh, ah, you know, or something like that while they're there, then you know what? They're good. And they're going to go about their merry way. In any case, you know, remain as silent as possible, short, concise answers. And if they insist on coming in, officer, I can't let you inside without a search warrant. Or, again, the simple, you know, if we want to use the same pattern over and over again, officer, I don't consent to any searches. That is correct. So make sure that's clear before they actually come into the house. Whatever they may see in there, you know, you told your partygoers to get clothed and everything else. As far as, you know, do your absolute best not to let them inside. But if they do actually get inside, anything that they find on the inside that is construed against your partygoers, that falls into the partygoer's lap at that point. And, you know, even if you don't want to let them, if you don't want to step out of your house and risk closing it behind him, you can absolutely speak through, like, the chain lock that's on your door. If you don't require their help, you can simply decline to answer the door at all, but I really wouldn't do that, especially if you've got a party going on. That might end up causing you, you know, more trouble than what it is that you want to put up with. So whenever you throw a private party, make sure that no one can see, no one can hear as best as possible. Make sure that all your partygoers know that whenever they enter, that this could be a possibility. And if that does happen, then watchman's number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, will let you know. Remain calm. You know, put away all the naughty parts as best you can, as quickly and as quietly as possible. And make sure that you're covered from neck to foot.
And those toy bag locks are back in use again, I presume, at this point?
Oh, if you're fast enough to do that, abso-freaking-lutely. Absolutely. I wholeheartedly support that. Anytime you have an encounter with a police officer, whether you're walking down the street, in your car, at a frolicon type event, at a hotel, whatever, your home, whatever the case may be, absolutely. If you're slick enough, you can get everything back into the bag and lock it, yeah, that's absolutely an ideal situation.
And we aren't talking big locks here. We're talking simple padlocks or some type of lock that impedes the opening of the case.
Absolutely. Again, as I said earlier, it could be a diary lock, one that you could pick with a hairpin. But it's the symbology of the lock, not necessarily the strength of the lock. You see what I mean?
Because the zippers on the bag are always going to be your weak link.
Oh, absolutely.
Ultimately. Your party goers, this is presuming your party's all legal. And you can't stress enough that the party should all be legal, correct? Has in no alcohol for minors and.
Well, how do they know? I mean, yeah, of course, always keep your party as legal as possible. If you're serving alcohol, then absolutely. You know, you don't necessarily take on more or less liability if people drink alcohol and then play. That's just a sort of a spoken and unspoken rule of people in our community. You know, they like to say, oh, don't drink alcohol and play because, you know, consent may or may not be, or consent may end up being pliable at that point. And we definitely don't like that. But yeah, I mean, if you're serving alcohol, for goodness sakes, have the party be 21 and up so there's no confusion. You know, Frolicon does that. And it's a really good philosophy is that if everybody is carded at the door as being 21 and up, then you don't have to worry about that.
And never have anybody underage in your play areas anyway.
You know, I have seen many different rules for many different dungeons around the United States that I have visited. And I'm just using dungeons as an example. You know, they're a business, they have more to lose and they have lots to lose if you know, anything hinky is discovered. And a lot of the places do not let anyone below the age of 21 into their play space. There are some that say 18 and up can be good. It just depends on if, you know, if they're mature, if they're this, if they've been vetted or whatever the case may be. If I were to open my own play space, I wouldn't let anyone under the age of 21. Because what happens if somebody got into mom and daddy's liquor cabinet and they were 19 years old and they looked older than that and they've been drinking a little bit and, you know, you couldn't really tell, and they come in and they want to play and they start playing and they're drunk or they're – no. Just make it 21 or up. Now, I realize with certain TNG groups and all this, that may end up, you know, not being a very popular point of view, but – you know, do you want to lose your business? It's one of those things. I personally would not recommend anyone under the age of 21, although I do know some dungeons do it. So as far as personal play party is concerned at your house, there's no way. If I was to do it at my house, there's no way anyone under the age of 21 would get in. No way.
The most compelling logic that I've heard actually is the fact that if you're under 21, the likelihood of you living at home with your parents goes up markedly. And there is always an extra possibility of problems when you go home later after the party.
Yeah. I mean, I just really would not. I just wouldn't do it. It just makes me cringe. The thought of it just makes me cringe. I personally would not do it. As an attorney and as a person, I just wouldn't do it. Just save yourself the headache.
Is there anything else that the homeowner needs to be aware of?
You know, if you're going to do this on a regular basis, even if you lease an apartment, you can get $1 million umbrella liability policy for relatively cheap on any homeowner's or renter's insurance policy. And you can get multiple ones if you want to take it out. It doesn't have to be necessarily connected to a homeowner's or renter's insurance policy. But I absolutely would recommend having something like that in place, because if you have a pool and somebody slips around the pool, if somebody gets injured, and I'm not even talking about in the course of play, just, you know, somebody slips and falls, you protect yourself, you know, absolutely protect yourself in regards to that sort of liability, because your best friend in the whole wide world is your best friend until they slip and fall, and then they get doctor's bills and then they want somebody to pay for them.
Yes.
In regards to liability waivers, you know, there are certain liability waivers that work, whether you're at a private club or whether you're at a private party in someone's home. I would not, if you're a homeowner, draft my own. I would definitely consult an attorney in regards to, a kink aware professional. There's a whole bunch of us on the NCSF's website. I mentioned them at the beginning of the podcast, National Coalition of Sexual Freedom.
It's ncsfreedom.org.
I absolutely would not ever, ever draft a waiver on my own. I would consult an attorney with that, because they will know what the rules are in your particular state and what it is that they need to write up to add to that, and what kind of protections you may or may not have. You know, that's very important. I just can't even I just cannot even stress that enough. Waivers are great, but get a lawyer to write them up for you.
Now, next thing, parties are expensive.
They are
horribly expensive.
Oh, you're going to ask about money, aren't you, Sunshine?
Yes, I am. And my advice always is to resist the temptation. If you can't afford the party, don't have the party.
You know, I kind of concur with you on that, because, and here's why it can get hinky, ladies and gentlemen who are listening. Let's say you go to somebody's house and they have a jar out there and it says donations. Sounds great, right? You absolutely want to help people. You put the money in there and you're single or you're in an open relationship and you're available, whatever the case, you're available sexually to new encounters with people with whom you did not previously know. How do you like that for a disclaimer?
I'm saying prostitution here.
Yeah, exactly. You go in, you find somebody, you hook up, you know, you do all this other stuff, and then the cops bust in, and you know, these homeowners didn't listen to Lady Steele. And then the cops come busting in, and it's like, wait, did you give, or God forbid you write a check and sign your name to it and say, hey, Mr. Jones, you know, who wrote this check? And you know, they walk in and you've got your woohoo and her ha-ha, and they're like, wait a minute, you paid money to be here, and now you've met a stranger and you're having sex. Yeah, that kind of smacks of solicitation to me. Yeah, you don't want to do that. Don't be that guy. what I recommended to a group who has me on retainer here in Georgia, by the way, many years ago, is if you want to take up donations for the party, let people know it is donations and take them up at a munch, take them up at a meeting of people, you know, ahead of time, a dinner, whatever the case may be. Do not take them on the night of the party so that money is not exchanged hands during the party. That's the best thing you can do to shield yourself from liability.
If you must take money.
If you must take money. I'm kind of with you. You know, if you can't afford to throw the party, don't throw the party.
What about having a party every weekend at your home?
Sure, yeah, you absolutely can do that. Hope you have understanding neighbors, but yeah, no. Or are you saying, will having a party regularly set you up for further liability? No.
What about your neighborhood association rules?
Well, again, you know, you that's the kind of thing that you need to read and take into account before you do anything that could put yourself in jeopardy. You know your laws as best as you can in order to ensure that you don't violate anything and that you don't get yourself into something you don't want to try to get yourself out of.
And once you're in it, you probably made the paper or the news.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That can absolutely happen. And, you know, I guess that's one of the benefits to me living a completely transparent lifestyle is that if that happened, it wouldn't be terribly devastating to me. But I understand that there are some people that have careers and children and all this. Believe me, I handle those kind of cases every day where they don't want to be outed. So, yeah, it's one of those things. You know, I love people who say, well, we should have the right to do X, Y, Z. Well, absolutely, we should. But if you have too much to lose, don't do it. Whatever it is, throwing a party, being in the lifestyle, being public in the lifestyle, whatever the case may be, if you cannot afford to lose what it is you've got, don't do it.
Lady Steele, I would like to take a pause here and wrap up part A, and we'll be coming back to our listeners in just a moment with part B.
Hear more from Lady Steele in episode 79, part B.